U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global, so creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
That means it's the weekend. You hear that music from Curtis Mayfield. Welcome to the Biz Lunch, everybody. Steve Bertrand here in the studios high atop the Chicago River on this beautiful summer day in the city of Chicago. You know, yesterday in the city of Chicago, the teachers union threatened to strike, which is not unlike them, but they were a little more direct this week than they have been. We're going to talk a little bit later in the program with Jeannie Allen, the founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform. They're a big group behind charter schools and sort of check in on the temperature of charter schools around the country and here in the city of Chicago as well. There were charter school teacher strikes in Chicago this year. Also, we'll check in with the Chicago Eater about restaurants that are opening and closing. I mentioned the Little Lululemon restaurant, which is fascinating. Crate and Barrel's opening a restaurant, too, so that comes up in the second half hour. Andrea Haines is here from the Chicago Tribune. She stops by on Fridays to talk about what's going on in the world of tech and innovation in the city. Andrea, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, it's all about jobs. You know, this is what Rahm Emanuel used to do, right? He used to travel around the city and have these news conferences about jobs he was bringing, usually from my suburb or others, into the city. And the mayor and the governor got together for one earlier this week. I think it was at Accenture. We'll talk about that. But the day's news has to do with Glassdoor, right? Glassdoor expanding their footprint in big time.
That's true. There was another one today in terms of a jobs announcement. This one is Glassdoor, which you may know from if you've ever Googled an employer that you're interested in. They have reviews of workplaces.
Right. So if you're going to maybe work for some or go apply for a job somewhere, you could go to Glassdoor and workers who work there anonymously, right? Anonymously, give their reviews of what it's like to work in the place. So, and it's really become, in a way, a sibling of LinkedIn. Is that a fair
That's
way
true.
To put
it's
it?
It's like,
yeah.
Yelp meets LinkedIn,
yeah,
maybe,
sort
right?
Of like
it's
like that.
It's sort of like the reviews. It's in that review style of Yelp. And
it's growing. It's generational, too. Like, my kids are all over Glassdoor all the time.
Totally, yeah. And they have big plans, as you point out. They say they will hire 500 additional workers in Chicago over the next few years. That's
right.
A lot.
That's a lot. And then in their press release, they say they have 900 workers worldwide now. I know they're in Dublin and elsewhere. So I'm a little dubious of them.
You know, jobs that announcements means, always,
right.
You have to see what actually happens.
I mean, they
but they are getting space behind it, so that gives a little more maybe credence to the idea that they will be growing quite a bit.
They're certainly going to be growing, but when they say over the next few years, it's sort of nebulous. But hey, the number is going up, so that's great. And that's in the Fulton Market area, right?
That's right. Very hot area. And they are adding space there as well. So, excuse me. Sorry, frog in my throat. They're going into a space there that will be
complete.
Actually, this week,
any reference to any waterborne animal is an alligator in your throat.
Oh, so, that's right. The alligator, the best story of the Chicago summer so far.
So you have an alligator in your throat. The mayor and the governor were together at Accenture to talk about more jobs coming there.
That's true. Here's a company that is already quite huge. We don't have to worry about that. And they are now planning to expand in the West Loop and hire 600 tech workers also within the next 3 years. And they're going to gather their employees, which they have 6,200 in Chicago. So it's really a huge number right at Oakley.
And so they're spaced around the city now, right? And they're going to bring them all in addition to the new hires, they're going to bring them all in under one roof.
That's their plan, right? They do have a few locations and they also do quite a lot of like remote working people. They have consultants who aren't necessarily working in
right.
the office, so they don't take as much space. But this is a hugely significant, really, number of jobs and a significant real estate deal.
I was interested in that they will be hoteling their workers, they say. Which
yes.
means, because that's the new thing where they say, well, you know, most of our workers don't come to the office, so we don't need as much space, which is true. But it's also this hoteling is a way for businesses now to lease less space and make their workers less comfortable.
Exactly. So you come in, you find your desk for the day, or
right.
maybe you have your own desk, but you don't sprawl into your space the way we were used to in our old cubicles.
Which may or may not be fair. I mean, I certainly can understand it. And this is going to be at right at Ogilvy. Is it at Ogilvy or at Union
yes.
Station? Okay.
Yep, Ogilvy.
All right, so that area continues to grow as well. Okay, one more job adding story, and this one's from Active Campaign. This is a company I don't know so much.
Yeah, this is a local software company, probably not quite as well known as Accenture or Glassdoor, but they are 16 years old, and they are planning on, again, a pretty big space and a pretty big headcount increase. They are looking to grow to more than 500 employees, and they had only 20 just a couple years ago.
That's
so
amazing.
This is an example of a startup that is potentially growing quite a bit.
And what do they do?
So they make software that helps clients deal with customers.
Okay.
So they're one of those classic Chicago, more of a business-to-business company.
Right, right,
it's not necessarily a company that the average person would know the name of.
Okay, so if we take all of these together, this is just a further indicative of how the city center is growing by leaps and bounds when it comes to jobs.
Particularly on that west side. And it's good news in that a lot of these jobs are really sort of those high-quality tech, true tech jobs. Versus only being, you know, sales or support type of roles.
And why is it that they're coming to Chicago or growing in Chicago? What do they say?
You know, they say talent. It's like, obviously, the real estate factor is probably part of it as well, right? But talent and real estate are both a pretty good deal here. And we do have a lot of tech talent that we would like to keep working in Chicago.
You know, it's so nice because everyone's always ripping on the city or ripping on the state, saying, oh, everyone's moving out. And you've got these companies coming in saying there is a great talent pool here. And I know even the mayor spoke to that when she was at Accenture, saying that the city government education owes it to these companies to continue funneling able and capable workers into them.
Yeah, I love that because I think that training, you know, training people from all parts of Chicago and continuing to beef up that workforce needs to be part of this, yeah. Right? Our natural born talent is a big resource that we have.
I wonder for the mayor, you know, because she campaigned a lot on bringing jobs out to the neighborhoods too. And so it's a no-brainer. You show up with the governor for this announcement. But at the same token, one of her first early jobs announcement is in the city center.
That's true. But you can't fight that. You still need the city
no,
center
can't.
To be growing. And hopefully, again, we grow some talent, you know, we do a better job of pulling talent out of other neighborhoods. And if they get great jobs downtown, I think that's a win too.
Hey, you know, the biggest story for me, which makes me most sad this past week, is that Charming Charlie is closing.
So I'm personally devastated.
I have no idea what Charming Charlie is.
I own like three things from Charming Charlie, so I did not personally keep them in business. However, they're in Northbridge, almost, you know, just across the street,
right,
almost from where the tower was, where you and I both worked at Tribune Tower until a year ago. And Charming Charlie was one of those great places to go for me, maybe not you, when you just needed to get away from the office for 20 minutes and go look at something else.
Well,
and
is it clothing, women's clothing? Or?
You know, it wasn't even clothing. It's more like accessories.
Okay.
So there was a minimal amount of clothing and things like scarves, but primarily it was inexpensive jewelry, that
really
kind of thing.
Kind of a small shop?
It was a small to medium shop. It's
right.
not. It's not another Nordstrom. It's not a department store.
I might have purchased a few birthday gifts for my wife there.
You might well have. And
yeah.
The unique thing about it was that they grouped everything by color. So it was kind of cool for me. Like if I was going to IU for the weekend, I wanted to get something red, you could, bam, go to the red section. Or if you're like, I need something white for summer, you go to the white section. And it was just visually a fun store to be in.
Well, and so research from CoreSite Research says that last year, 5,800 retail outlets closed. This year already were 7,062 have closed. CoreSite estimates that by all of 219, I'm sorry, let me read that again. CoreSite estimating the total for all of 2019 to be about 12,000 retail outlets closing.
Yeah, they use the word carnage in this Bloomberg story, retail carnage. And the exact act I described of kind of going to browse or going to a physical location, as we always talk about, has been supplanted somewhat. And now with Charming Charlie going bankrupt, they're closing all of their stores, which includes 14 in Illinois.
That's why when you go to Crate and Barrel, you'll be able to sit down and order a bowl of soup soon.
I know. That's kind of, you know, bring people in how you can. And that Restoration Hardware has a gorgeous restaurant. So
oh, really?
That's worth checking out.
All right. That's coming up later in the program. Andrea Haines, thanks for coming by this Friday. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Steve. You too.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. You know, yesterday the Chicago Teachers Union, stymied so far in talks with the city, started talking about a school strike. There were actually a couple of charter school strikes in Chicago within the past several months. One of the people really behind the charter school movement in this country is the founder of the Center for Education Reform. Jeannie Allen is on a phone line with us now. Jeannie, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks so much. Good afternoon.
Okay, so you got started in 1993, right? Are you surprised by how far you are now?
You know, it's kind of a few steps forward and a couple of steps back. I mean, we've seen extraordinary change and transformation in so many communities and cities across the country when it comes to providing parents more power, teachers more authority, and the public more accountability. But I'll tell you what, we are still barely scraping the surface when it comes to educating kids.
Well, you know, I've lived in the city for 35 years, and when I came here, I think I could have named all of the high schools that students went to around the city. Now I hear high school names I've never heard of before. They're popping up left and right because of all of these all new sort of charter opportunities.
That's right. And I actually happened to be in Chicago yesterday for a meeting with a lot of business folks and people, rank and file, normal people, as I like to say, that aren't involved in this stuff, Steve. And, you know, the interesting thing is how many people told me that they are looking to either move if they live in the city of Chicago, put their kids in an alternative, put their kids in a charter or a private school because they just don't want to settle for mediocrity anymore or failure.
But it's gotten a lot better here in the city with the public schools, and there are public charter schools available as well, correct?
You know, I think it's a relative term. Have Chicago public schools improved since, you know, then Secretary Bill Bennett in 1987 called it the worst school system in the country?
Wait, I'm going to stop you right there. I was there that day.
I bet.
I was in the room. There was a news conference with Harold Washington and Harold Washington then said, and Bennett says we're getting a lot better. And Bill Bennett was standing behind him and he just shook his head. He said, No, you're not.
I'm not funny. I mean, it's a history lesson a lot of people don't remember, but Chicago is, though, however, like Boston, like New York, like Washington, like so many other places. In fact, Washington's the fastest growing place. We're just not good enough. Okay, let's just put it this way. When less than 35% of your kids are proficient in reading, writing, math, history, civics, it's not good enough. So, yes, has Chicago gotten marginally better? There have been a few point upticks annually, which we can attribute to more innovation in the school systems, more flexibility, starting back with Mayor Emanuel, and because of charter schools, by the way, that have pressured schools to get better, and because so many people are recognizing that if they don't cut bait, they're going to have to move on.
Okay, so what is the goal of, is there a unifying goal of charter schools in that it's, the idea is that it will come upon a new method that can be shared widely, or are we just going to continue with all sorts of independent sort of approaches?
So the issue isn't whether or not charter schools are the answer or not. The issue is how do we actually create schools that are tailored and personalized to the needs of kids, not try to stick kids in schools based on where they live. I mean, there's no other country in the world that actually thinks that they can serve kids the way we do. We do it very much like we did 150 years ago. You're zoned by your zip code. Unless you have the money to go somewhere else or unless you happen to have a publicly sanctioned alternative like a charter. So the idea of charter schools, the ideas of opportunities inside traditional systems like Chicago public schools, outside in other public schools like charters, even with the scholarship programs that are abundant in Chicago, not enough, however, is having schools that are built around student needs, approaches, and maybe the diverse array of ways they learn. And some might be small and some might be big and some might be specialized and some might be back to basics. But the point is, no two kids learn the same way or are the same way that we want them to achieve.
My kids went to school and went to public schools in a suburb, in a northern suburb, a great school district, and they got all those things. They had all those things in a public school district. So why can't all public school districts offer that? I mean, why does it have to be outside? Shouldn't we be focusing on making this public school districts do this rather than tearing the public school districts down?
We have worked on this for years. That's exactly the question that business leaders and government officials asked in the 80s when we had the nation at risk. It's what they've asked throughout the 90s before they turned to better changes and standards and more accountability and no child left behind and everyone succeeds. The reason you can't just say that we can make public school systems better is because school systems are not about whether or not you're flexibly changing to the needs of students. There are contracts, rules, bureaucracy, regulation, top-down contracts like the unions have, There are the people, the structures, the attitudes, and the practices all follow pretty much the same thing. The reason your kids got well-educated, pretty much, to be honest, is because they came from your home. But well, what do you do when you're not sending the child to school with a home that needs that? You have to have a school that minimizes the differential.
I thank you for the compliment, but they also were at a school district like that because we have a very inequitable way of funding our schools in this state.
Yes,
and
my kids
benefited from that, where kids in the city don't, which is a real problem. Jeannie Allen.
And imagine if every child was worth the same amount of money, Steve, then that wouldn't happen.
Jeannie Allen, look, I wish you great success. I hope you find the cure.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, Eric, I am picturing you. Are you a Lululemon person or are you not a Lulu? I'm going to say you are not a Lululemon person.
I am not a Lululemon person. I've never been inside a store. I don't know anything about Lulu.
Well, here's what it is. Lululemon is a store you can buy the same thing at Target, but you spend an extra $100.
Oh, perfect.
I think that's probably
not
true.
It's a great business model. I love it.
I like that. That's quite not the case, but Lululemon is one of those stores, really, it's one of the only stores I go in, and it just makes me angry when I'm in there because, you know, they sell yoga pants and all sorts of wonderful clothing, and maybe it's peer pressure or whatever. I feel like, oh, I should be going in here. My friends buy things here and blah, blah, blah. And I go in there and I just look around and they try to sell this sort of lifestyle thing to you and it just makes me angry and I have to leave.
I've never been inside the store, so I don't know. But generally speaking, I don't think I know that I've heard women complain about the prices of Lululemon stuff. So it doesn't seem like it would be something that I would venture into.
I certainly have men friends who love it as well. So, I give it a shot every 6 months and I'm sure I'll try again. But
Please let me know the results.
I just walk around and, there's just I don't mean to put down the store or the people who work there or anything, but they have it's a very sort of packaged approach, whether it's the workers or the way things are shelved or all of that, and it just doesn't do well. But we talked earlier about Charming Charlie, I think it is, it's going out of business. Retailers are trying to find a way to get more and more customers to come into their buildings because you can buy everything online now. And one of the ways they're doing it is to create a restaurant space. Lululemon has done that. Crate and Barrel has done that as well. And we'll see whether or not that is a success. I don't know. Would you be inclined to go have a bowl of soup at Crate and Barrel?
I'd give it a shot. Why not?
Would you? A long day of shopping for garlic presses and champagne flutes, that you'd stop and have lunch?
Well, why not? I mean, IKEA worked for them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's an excellent point. All right, buddy. Ashok Selvam is in the studio. He's a senior editor at, is it Eater Chicago or Chicago Eater?
Eater Chicago. We get that question a lot.
Yeah, because, the website's chicago.eater, right?
Yeah, just for URL purposes, okay. But we are Eater Chicago official.
Okay, come on. So I was just talking about how Lululemon makes me mad because it's so expensive and I just don't quite get it. But now they're opening up a restaurant space in Oak Brook?
The Lululemon opened yesterday
in
Lincoln Park.
In the city, right. Yeah.
Yeah, north in Sheffield.
Right. And so, and what's the point of all of this?
The point is it's multi-layered. First of all, we got internet sales that are just cannibalizing the brick and mortars. So you've got to make a store worth visiting. So Lululemon says, well, let's put a restaurant in there.
That's certainly a very fashionable neighborhood, and they've got classes there, right? And the classes are sold out.
Yeah, they're doing 40 to 50 a week.
Wow.
And you can eat a burger and drink a beer while, you're right next to two fitness studios.
Right, so you would do the yoga class first and then go have the burger, right? I wouldn't do the burger, then the yoga class.
Probably not advisable.
Right, okay. So there's that one. And then a similar story, I guess, and this one's in Oak Brook, is the Crate and Barrel store that's opening a restaurant.
Yeah, they opened last week. It's called Table for Crate.
Mm-hmm.
And they took over a vacant Land of Nod, which is Crate and Barrel's children furniture store. So, you have vacant furniture, and again, this goes back to the brick and mortars and how they're suffering. You have vacant property, and Circuit City isn't going to come through that door.
Right.
Those big names, they just don't You know, they don't draw customers.
Okay, so is this the first restaurant for Lululemon and the first restaurant? I know it's the first one for Crate and Barrel.
Yeah, it's the first for both of them.
Okay, and this is probably a trend with other retailers around the country?
Yeah, we're seeing it. Like, actually, I've been having some discussions with some colleagues how Chicago has kind of been the center of that.
Really?
Because Lululemon, they vacated, they took over the former space that was Restoration Hardware.
Okay.
And Restoration Hardware moved to Gold Coast, where Brendan Sadikoff's Hog Salt Hospitality, they do Cheval. Everyone loves that burger.
Right, right.
They opened a cafe that's very successful.
Someone
there
just said that. I don't know if it was on the air or off, but that Restoration Hardware has a great restaurant.
Yeah, it's very picturesque. It's a great great time during the day as a chandelier. It's pretty.
If you've got retailers opening restaurants, that's harder on the traditional restaurants maybe. And a real institution in Logan Square is shutting its doors. Marcello's Father and Son Pizza.
Yeah, that's sad. I grew up on the Northwest side,
yeah.
And father and son used to have a location in Jefferson Park. Then we moved to Lincoln Park. My family still lives right there, and they closed their Lincoln Park location last year.
Was it on North Avenue, right? Was it North Avenue?
Yeah, North Avenue. Okay. Yeah, but then near Halstead. And, we love those chicken wings, and they do that tavern-style pizza that, you know, real Chicagoans know that's the real deal. It's not the deep dish that represents our city.
And so they're closing on, are they on Milwaukee now? I know they were Whipple when they started.
Yeah, Milwaukee on Logan Square. 72 years.
And which is sad, but I've been to the one, there's still one in Northbrook, right?
Yeah, that's the last remaining one.
Okay. It just doesn't have the same feel as the one in Logan Square.
No, it really doesn't. And when you're eating tavern-style pizza, you actually want to be in Chicago.
Yeah, I think so. Then you write about a new pizzeria on the Riverwalk, a very different scene from Logan Square.
Oh, wow. This is Let Us Entertain You's kind of vanity project, if you will. $50 million they sunk into that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
but this is going to be more than one restaurant, right?
Yeah, it just opened. I mean, if you like kind of look toward the left, you might make a little bit of it out. Pizzeria Portofino. It's an Italian Riviera style pizzeria.
Will Chicagoans go for fancy pizza?
I don't know if it's that fancy. They'll go for that view, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll go for the view no matter what.
A testament to Mayor Emanuel, right? This is what he's been pushing for, and it's really coming true.
Yeah, you know, make another, people like to be near the water, and we wanted to take advantage of that.
Ashok Salvam, the senior editor at Eater Chicago, thanks for coming by.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Not too long ago, many people were scared that traditional retail was going away forever, and we'd only be able to buy things with our voices or fingertips. Order more paper towels.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
But that just ain't true, friends, because it's just the next stage of the industry's evolution. Apt Electronics is even using their sales footprint and expertise to show other businesses that everything comes back to retail in a way. Consumers have options in just about everything. So Apt is working with a number of healthcare leaders to remind them that. It doesn't really matter if you're selling homemade art on Etsy or providing the most important medical services. How you do it and if it's done with quality is the most important thing. And speaking of buying, we might be buying synthetic or laboratory-made milk options in the grocery store soon. Illinois-based Archer Daniel Midland has invested in the San Francisco-based company called Perfect Day. Its goal is to make synthetic whey, which is one of the main parts of creating milk. Given the popularity of meat alternatives, this might have some serious momentum going forward. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
All right, big thanks, Orion Samuelson. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. And we thank them for that. Steve Bertrand here in the WGN studios, high above the Chicago River, along Wacker Avenue here on this Friday, ahead of another nice summer weekend. Joining us now is John Pletz from Crain's Chicago Business. Crain's is out with their Tech 50, the 2019 list. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch. We're talking about this Tech 50 list. And, I look through the names. There's certainly some familiar names, some familiar companies. But when you look through it, what do you see? Are there any unifying factors?
No, it sort of gives you a sense of where Chicago's strong and, you know, what we do well, which, you know, tech looks like the rest of the Chicago economy. There's a little bit of everything. And that's really what this list reflects. So it's everything from the tech startups or the tech companies that everybody sort of thinks of when they think of tech, whether that's a company like Grubhub, or Google. And certainly there's folks from there. There's a number of startups. And then there's also a lot of companies that people tend not to think of and when it comes to tech. But you have some pretty some pretty senior leaders at non-tech companies that have very significant tech needs. So, you know, you got companies like Brunswick, you know, you got the state of Illinois, you know, their CIO, you know, who came from the private sector and is now working in government.
You know, we talked about
that. You know, the guys at McDonald's. So it's a little bit of everything. It looks a lot like Chicago Tech.
We talk about that when it comes to innovation awards, that you would tend to think, well, innovation, these must be coming from small startup companies, which is the case many times, but not always, because it's the big companies that need to innovate as well. So it's the big companies that need to work when it comes to tech just as well, as much as the smaller companies, the upstarts.
Right, right, absolutely.
And so is this is the ninth year for this list. Does it tend to be a fluid list, or is it relatively static? I mean, you know what I'm saying there, right? Are there the go-to
people? No, it's very fluid. We purposely rebuild the list every year.
Right.
We start from scratch.
Okay.
If it was just a Hall of Fame list, you know, you'd only need to see it once, and there's sort of no point in coming back. So, yeah, it's basically 50 new faces every year.
I want to ask you about another story you've written recently, Neil Salas. It's Salas Griffin, correct?
Right.
And this is a guy, a fascinating guy. He's only 31 years old, but in many ways he's already conquered the world and found that the world can conquer him. I mean, he ran for mayor.
Yes.
And there, you know, unfortunately, really did not go well. I think he was the candidate, right, who had a really tough start, a kickoff to the campaign.
Yes.
But he's a great success story, and now he's taking over TechStars Chicago. Tell me about Neil.
Well, you know, Neil's been a really interesting entrepreneur and member of the, you know, Chicago tech community. Going back to Starter League, they were one of the pioneers in what, you know, these coding boot camps, and they sort of, you know, it's a classic Chicago startup story, which is they had a need because they had a need themselves, mm-hmm. and it turned into something that a lot of other people had a need for, and a lot of people copied it. And, you know, Neil, you know, did that. Then he's also been, you know, sort of active with other startups. And then he decided to run, you know, because he's also a Chicago guy. Grew up on the South Side.
Right.
And so he is, you know, there's a sort of surprising intersection in Chicago if you think of a lot of the members of the tech community. That have done, you know, have had some success in the last 5-6 years. Also, were heavily involved in politics. So there's a bunch of people who worked on the Obama campaign, for instance, that
point,
went
right.
back to the private sector. And Neil's one of those guys. I mean, there's another guy I profiled a couple weeks ago, is Samir Mayakar, who is a deputy mayor for Lori Lightfoot. He's in charge of economic development. He's 35 years old. He's also on the Tech 50 list, as a matter of fact. He ran a startup. He was a Northwestern kid, but he had worked at he worked for the Obama administration. He had been on the campaign and then worked at the White House. So there's this interesting intersection of people who have done politics, public service, and have also done tech. And Neil's one of those guys. So, you know, he's gonna do TechStars, which is an incubator or an accelerator, one of the early ones here in Chicago. And you know, it is one of the you know, one of the pieces of the Chicago tech community that matters. So Neil's going to go do that, and so we'll see what's next for him. He is an interesting guy. He's very young, and you know, I think he's only like 31. So he's done a lot.
John Pletz writes for Chicago Crane Chicago Business. Read more at chicagobusiness.com and check out their Tech 50 list. John, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Glad to do it. Thanks, guys.